Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We have a little bit of a small announcement here, Matt. Questions, concerns, comments, rants, anything that you want. If you're sitting there listening to the show and you don't feel like going on Twitter and writing a message, or you don't own a Twitter, you only like using Facebook, or you don't like emailing in, and you're on your phone, most of you are on your phone when you're listening to this podcast, we finally have a number where it's easy, quick. It takes seconds to leave a comment or a question. Our number is 331-979-1369. That is the official Locked On Bulls number for you guys to text in. It takes a matter of seconds. So if you're sitting there listening to the show, you disagree or agree with something that we're saying, and you're not somebody who likes to tweet out at us or to email, you can send us a text message. We're going to see it in a matter of seconds. And if you're bold enough to leave us a voicemail during mailbag sessions, or you just have a rant after a game, if you don't like something that you saw and you're willing to leave us a voicemail, you can call that number and leave a voicemail for us, and we'll play the best ones on air every week. So we're hoping to get a lot of feedback from this. So really, if you're a Bulls fan and you do have comments, we want to hear from you. So that's once again, 331-979-1369 is our new official phone number, I guess hotline I would call it, for you guys to send all your questions, comments, and concerns to us, as well as your voicemails. But Matt, what's going on? How are you?
I like that, Jordan, the Locked On Bulls hotline. I can't wait for our first batch of ridiculous rants that people will call in and say, this, that, and the other thing. I love hearing from passionate Bulls fans, and now we have yet another way to get our listeners interacting with the show. So really looking forward to it. As a side note for all of you across the board Chicago sports fans out there, I just saw my Twitter feed as we're recording here on Wednesday morning. Matt Forte just announced his retirement from the NFL. So a little sad, but can't wait to reminisce. I think I'm going to go back and watch some Matt Forte Bears highlights at some point later today. But happy retirement to a Bears legend.
I met Matt Forte in a weird way. I met him at a random signing when I was younger, and it was at a PNC Bank. It was like the most bizarre thing in the world. It had to be when he was like a rookie or a sophomore, but it was just the weirdest interaction I've ever had. I know he's a great dude. I've heard nothing but good things about him. So yeah, that's a little bit sad. He was a workhorse here in Chicago for a long time, and I know that this city, first and foremost, whatever you want to say, obviously to Matt and I, it's a little different, but this is first and foremost a Bears city. And I know the Cubs are creeping closer and closer, and there's always the love for the Chicago Bulls here. But first and foremost, I think the Chicago as a city is a Bears fan.
Still a Bears city, man. Could you imagine when Urlacher and Briggs were still playing at a high level, Bears defense was still rocking, we had Forte, what could have been if we had a even close to top tier quarterback?
Man, it's depressing, and I don't want to depress our fans right off the start of the show. But so yes, please leave us voicemails, text messages. It's nice too, because this gives sort of an anonymous way of sending in comments and questions. If you don't like attaching your name to things or just whatever, it's a little bit more anonymous now. So that's you can true. Send us a text message.
Because if you have a dumb take on Twitter, I will call you out for it.
So, yeah, we want to hear from you guys. So whether it's a voicemail or a quick text message, it takes literally seconds. You're already on your phone listening to this podcast as it is. Obviously, don't text and drive. Don't call us while you're driving. But we would love to hear from you. 331-979-1369. So that's once again, 331-979-1369. Save that number in your phone is Locked On Bulls. Text us. Send us your questions. Send us your voicemails. We'd love to hear from you. So today on the show, we just want to real quick recap the loss to the Charlotte Hornets last night, and then we're going to dive right into mailbag for you. Obviously, don't forget, we have two episodes yesterday. We dropped a double episode, over 2 hours worth of Bulls content. We had a great interview with Chris Bleck, too. So if you didn't catch that last night, go back and re-download those episodes, listen to that as well as listening to this episode today. So Matt, let's get your, I want to get your take on this Charlotte Hornets team and this loss last night. Obviously another tank loss, another one where we're stacking up. Anything outside of yesterday, what we talked about in that small sample size of the guys that were getting minutes, including Cameron Payne and Cristiano Felicio and Noah Vonleh and David Nwaba. And we also saw Zach LaVine play in this game. So anything different, anything that really changed other than what we had talked about over the previous three games, that these guys were getting a little bit more run?
No, I think it was, you know, a similar outcome. It was another game in which the Bulls were able to hang with their opponent for the first half. It was actually a tie game after 24 minutes. But then the Bulls, another poor third quarter. That's kind of been a recent trend for them. And the third quarter was absolutely dominated by Dwight Howard. I think he had like 16 of his, what did he finish with? 24? I think he had 16 of his 24 in the third quarter. Dwight Howard finished 10 of 12. Just absolutely bullied the Bulls down low. He looked like 2009 Dwight Howard, which Dwight Howard really doesn't look like that version of himself that frequently these days. But he looked great, and Kemba Walker did his thing. He had a dominant night. He was 11 and 19 for 31. The Bulls defensively did not have what it took to hang with that combo down the stretch. And the Bulls themselves on the offensive end, very irresponsible, very careless with the ball. The Bulls finished with, I think, 21 turnovers in this game as a team. So if you're doing that and you can't stop your opponent in the second half when it matters, you're not going to win many games.
Yeah, another really bad night for Chris Dunn. 7 turnovers. Yeah. I think this was a season high for Chris Dunn. 7 turnovers, that's not going to do you any good, especially when you're going up against one of the best point guards in the Eastern Conference in Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker poured it on with 31 points and 5 assists, 2 rebounds, 3 steals. Kemba Walker actually had 6 turnovers as well. So it's a very sloppy game. The one thing I did see that made me laugh, just because I'm an Indiana alum, so anytime guys from Indiana that played there are going up against each other, man, Noah Vonleh had a dirty crossover on Cody Zeller in this game and put him straight on his ass. So
that was probably the highlight of the game right there.
Oh, absolutely. And so that was a lot of fun to watch. I thought Denzel Valentine had a pretty nice game in this, coming off the bench along with Bobby Portis too. Bobby Portis 4 for 9, 2 for 4 from 3. He had 10 rebounds and 12 points in 23 minutes. Denzel Valentine was 5 for 9. He was 2 for 4 from 3. He had 6 rebounds and 4 assists. Obviously, with these games, it's kind of picking and figuring out which guys are having games and outstanding games. As far as the collective goes with the Bulls, I would rather spend the last 21 games going through individual play in these games rather than as a collective whole, because I feel like the one and most important factor here is player development. So that's why when we're talking about these games, especially leading to the end of the season, you're going to hear a lot of us talking specifically about guys in these games, specifically what they're doing. We talked about Cristiano Felicio, which actually he had a pretty nice night bouncing back on the offensive side. At least he was 6 for 8, He had 6 rebounds, 4 assists, and 12 points in 26 minutes of play.
Yeah, all 12 of those came in the first half, by the way.
So obviously not a great second half for him. Zach LaVine played 35 minutes, the most on it of anybody of this Bulls team. David Nwaba played 32 minutes. Zach LaVine finished up with 21 points. He was 7 for 19 from the field. He had 4 rebounds and 4 assists as well. But like you said, going back to Dwight Howard, specifically this season too, after being pretty much unwanted by Atlanta, his hometown team, he restructured, reshaped his body. He got skin, he got thinner and wanted to reinvigorate his career because he felt like, and there's a really long piece by Richard Deitch. He did this in September for Sports Illustrated, going through sort of Dwight Howard's path in the NBA, his time in Orlando, his time in Los Angeles, even in Atlanta. And it's a really good piece if you want to get a behind the scenes look about Dwight Howard, kind of just get that, I guess that personal touch that you could get from Dwight Howard that maybe some people don't know about him. Really fantastic article about him. But yeah, he looked like Dwight Howard of him old, his old self, with 24 points, 6 rebounds. He had 5 blocks in this game. He was 10 for 12 from the field, and he was a plus 18 in the box. So Dwight Howard, I mean, if he, like, the Charlotte Hornets got a pretty solid deal for him and coming in to be a center where a lot of these guys, they've been kind of a swing and a miss for the Hornets. And I look at this roster and I'm like, please, for the love of God, I hope the Bulls don't end up like the Charlotte Hornets in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And, you know, speaking of Charlotte's roster, let's give ourselves a quick shout out to Michael Carter Williams, former Blues Chicago man. Bull. He went 1 for 11, including 0 of 6 from downtown in this game for 4 points. I just forgot that Michael Carter Williams was a one-man SC, not top 10 highlight reel. I mean, the guy is a joke. I can't believe he is on an NBA roster. He only played 14 minutes, and he took 11 shots and only made one of them.
Classic. And I felt like when he played,
and that's a guy that the Bulls thought that they needed to have on their roster.
Does it make it you even more mad that they cut Spencer Dinwiddie in order to keep?
Yeah, it does, because Dinwiddie is balling for Brooklyn these days.
So I know I saw that. And then on top of all of that, he tried to get into a little scuffle with Bobby Portis at the end. And like, does he know Bobby Portis is the best bowler in his region? And he will not only bowl a 300 on your ass, but he will drop your ass at a point. And I saw somebody make the funniest comment of the night and said, Michael Carter Williams trying to resurrect his career like Nico did. And I literally fell to the floor crying, laughing. That was probably the best comment I've seen all night. Michael Carter Williams, though, dude, I don't know how this guy has a job along with Cameron Payne in this league. Like, I have no idea. Why would you spend $3.2 million on Michael
Carter Williams? Payne had a better game than Michael Carter Williams last night, man. Payne put up 6 points and 6 assists in 18 minutes, 3 of 4 from the floor.
That's like asking me to go watch a Division III basketball game and say, oh, this team's better than this team. Like, both guys, like I'm floored that both either of these guys have an NBA job and people continue to pay them millions of dollars to sit at the end of their bench, come off for 14 minutes and hit one shot.
Yeah. I also wasn't too surprised to see Bobby talking a little trash to Michael Carter Williams, giving him an elbow here or there. But also, Bobby Portis was talking a lot of trash to Dwight Howard last night. And I'm sorry, I'm pretty sure Dwight Howard got the better of that exchange. Because he basically put the Bulls away by himself in the third quarter. Bobby did manage to trick Dwight into an offensive foul late in the game. I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, it was late in the fourth quarter when the Bulls' loss was pretty much already in hand. But it was one element of, you know, we were talking about Bobby's defensive deficiencies in yesterday's episode. And he still has a lot of work to do in that area, but he did a couple of times show that he was not afraid to bang bodies down low with Dwight, at least, you know, trying to take him one-on-one. And as, you know, as big and strong as Bobby is, Dwight is bigger and stronger. And Dwight definitely got the better of their exchanges when those two went one-on-one a handful of times. But it's that fearlessness of Bobby Portis. He's not afraid of Dwight Howard. He's not afraid of anybody in this league.
The final thing I wanted to wrap up with, too, is Kemba Walker absolutely torching Cristiano Felicio. Like, I'll give props to Cristiano Felicio for staying with him for as long as he did on that. But man, did he make him look like a fool. And obviously, it's Kemba Walker with some of the best handles in the NBA going up against Cristiano Felicio, who's touted for his footwork. And
last season. Like, where the hell is that this year?
So, yeah, I saw that live and I was like, wow, if Kemba Walker would have hit that, that would probably have been an SC top 10. Honestly, it's going to happen. We're going to see a lot of this, especially in the last 20 games of the season. You're going to see a lot of not top 10 plays from the Chicago Bulls team, which is fine. I mean, as long as we get the 4, 5, 6 guys that we're trying to look at and see what that they can do, I can take the highlights of the getting crossed over, getting your ankles broken, bad shots, plays being blocked, even getting dunked on. I can deal with all of that as long as I see some good out of some of the guys that I really want. Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, David Nwaba, Zach LaVine, Noah Vonleh, Bobby Portis. Like, if I can see good things out of those guys, I'm cool with the rest of it coming kind of in shambles in the last 20 games.
Yeah. And you mentioned it's obviously that core of the young guys that you want to see making strides here as we finish up this season. That was a concern of mine watching this game, is that it was another night in which we had the three main pieces, right? We had Markkanen, Nwaba, and LaVine sharing the court together. And it was, you know, only, I feel like it's still been fewer than 10 games that those three have been on the court together. And their plus-minus numbers as a trio are not great. And I think sometimes when Fred tries to sort of run the offense through LaVine to get him into the flow of the game and to try to help him get his form back, it kind of makes Chris Dunn obsolete. And, you know, essentially Dunn's sitting in one of the corners and, you know, is just really not doing much off the ball. And he's not a strong enough three-point shooter that is a useful thing for him to be doing. You know, similarly to some of the problems this Bulls offense had last season at times when it was, you know, either Wade or Butler handling the ball and then, you know, somebody was off the ball not doing anything, whether that was Rondo, whether it was one of the three alphas, whether it was, you know, one of their wings who was just sitting and not moving in one of the corners. It's an issue with LaVine right now that he and Nwaba and Markkanen are still trying to develop that chemistry, but when LaVine is the primary ball handler, it really is a disservice to Chris Dunn.
Yeah, and I can agree with that too, and it's going to take some time, and I think I didn't imagine it was going to all come at once, and I know you didn't either. It's going to take some time to figure out.
Did you hear LaVine's quote on that after the loss last night?
Yeah, he said,
Rome wasn't built in half a season.
Yeah, and he said, like, Lowry just had a kid, and Chris Dunn just coming off of a pretty scary injury. He said, I'm just coming back, too, so it's going to take some time. It's nice when players have a little bit of self-reflection, they realize what's going on. They don't get all worked up like maybe some fans do. So it's going to take time. And like, this is going to bleed over into the summer. This is going to bleed over into next season. And so I think not only just getting some playing time out there right now, they can learn from some of these mistakes. They can use that as fuel this summer when they're working on things together, practicing, working out, getting stronger, getting better. I think just those three guys, Lowry, Chris Dunn, and Zach LaVine, I think those are some of the things that they can pick up and learn in the summer and hopefully come back stronger and better next season. But yeah, certainly, obviously, with Zach LaVine in there, Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, they're all going to have to figure out their roles and what best fits is sort of their scheme and how to get everybody touches and everybody happy and everybody sort of in rhythm. But yeah. I want to get to our mailbag segment here. But before we do that, I just want to remind you guys again about the text message and voicemail line. The official hotline of Locked On Bulls is 331-979-1369. Every Wednesday, we're going to play the best voicemails that are left for us and obviously read your text message as well. That'll be all throughout the week. So if you're sending us questions, comments, concerns, we're going to read the best of those on air live. So remember, leave us a voicemail, leave us a text message while you're listening to the show. It takes a matter of seconds. Save this number in your phone, 331-979-1369. All right, now to mailbag. So, Matt, I've got a few here in front of me. It was kind of a mixed bag of questions today. It was more sort of a evergreen mailbag, at least on my side. I want to start with this question, though. It's non-related to the Bulls, but I think it's an important question. It's something that we talked about yesterday. So this comes from Jason B. from email, and he says, with the NCAA scandal going on, how likely do you guys think it is for the NBA to start pushing the G League harder than they have in the past? How do you think that could compete with the NCAA? Would it matter at all for the prospects? Matt, I'll let you touch on this first.
That's interesting. I mean, this is something that you and I were talking to Chris Black about in our great interview with him in one of yesterday's episodes. Like, something like the status quo is not great, right? I feel like everybody who is a fan of both college hoops and NBA and wants to see the best players come to the NBA and contribute right away feel like the G League is kind of this quasi weird league where it's not necessarily a farm system like they have in baseball or minor league hockey. It's just kind of the place where careers go to die. Not across the board, but I feel like most of them, people that get sent to the G League are players who were drafted and have kind of in the first year or two of their career were labeled a bust by the team that drafted them and sent down. And, it, you know, if not that, it's a way for guys who are young, whether, you know, first year players, second year players who can't get minutes on their team's actual loaded roster in the NBA to get some experience. But it's not a big draw for the fans. People don't watch G League games regularly. And I don't know if the quality of the competition in the G League is doing the players in that league any services as far as improving their game to try to get to the NBA level. Collegiately, the NCAA product in basketball is not great these days. Everybody knows that. A lot of the game, just watching handfuls of games this season, some of them are ugly. You watch some of these games, like Bama had a game where they put up only like 15 points at the half. I think, who was it? Was it Virginia Tech? Or some other team recently had a game where they only put up like 7 points and a half. College basketball is struggling. And it's that same problem that you and I were talking about with Chris, with the whole one and done rule that exists right now. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I don't have a solution to this. And maybe it is just letting kids go straight from high school to the NBA again. But nobody wants the G League right now. I feel like nobody is excited that it is growing and adding teams, and nobody wants to watch G League games, and nobody really believes that those G League players are going to make that jump to go back to the NBA or to the NBA for the first time and be difference makers.
Yeah, I have a couple thoughts on this, and one is interesting to your point about how they're marketing the G League and whether or not people actually tune in. And I think that's the most difficult part here is people who tune in and watch college basketball religiously are huge college basketball fans. Those fans are harder to grab and grasp and steal them away from the NCAA and get them to pay attention to a G League game. Obviously, there's connections. People go to these schools and then they root for their team. Same thing as college football or any other major revenue sport that's on TV. Basketball and football being the most. I think the one thing that you touched on there is huge. I think for the NBA, they need to get rid of the age requirement. The age requirement is so stupid. All it does is help the NCAA sort of funnel these guys in for a year. They get to make hundreds of millions of dollars off these guys' talents and likenesses in for what, 8 months out of a season? And then I get people all the time yelling at me, well, they get free education. Dude. The kid's 18 years old. If he wants to go and he's got the talent to do it and he wants to go to the NBA and play basketball professionally, he should be allowed to do that. He shouldn't have to go to college and pretend like he's going to class and do all these other things for 8 months when really you're not even really a student on campus for most of these stars out there. They're there for basketball. That's all they're there for, and that's what they want. I think for the NBA, you got to get rid of that age requirements. And I know the G League, when you're 18 years old, you can play in the G League and you can qualify. A lot of guys don't do that because it sacrifices their eligibility in the NCAA. And for a lot of these places, the connections are way better in the NCAA. And obviously with all these things coming out now with the wiretaps and the FBI investigation, things might change here relatively soon. And I know we talked even a couple months ago about how Rick Pitino said that he feels like the NBA is going to, in 2 or 3 years, get rid of that rule and guys are going to be able to go straight from high school. Well, obviously he knew more than we did. And we kind of said that. We were like, you know, there's something Rick Pitino's saying here. And if you read between the lines, something's going to go down. Obviously there did. And this huge scandal could change things. So for me, NCAA basketball is in a rut. This has been the worst season I've seen in terms of college basketball, and having to watch the product, like you said, is not very good.
But that doesn't change the fact that it'll still always have way more fans than the G League, because college basketball is college basketball, and those college kids are huge fans of their school's team. But I mean, to the point of all of the scandals that have been coming out, I feel like it's common out. Anybody who's everybody that's either a retired NBA player currently in the NBA, you know, a coach at either the collegiate or NBA level has come out and said in the past, you know, week or so, when all of these scandals have been coming out, like, no, duh. Of course, all of these teams are paying these kids under the table. Of course, they're quote unquote breaking all these quote unquote rules. So why are they there? If essentially, like Jalen Rose, I think on a podcast or on SportsCenter earlier this week said, basically it's run like a giant cartel and they're breaking all these rules and there's all of this money and, you know, products and goods being exchanged from hands in a way that is technically illegal. So if the problem is that they're breaking the rules and a possible solution is making players at the collegiate level earn money, and that would maybe incentivize more of these young players to actually play college ball for a year, heck, maybe even 2 years or 3 years, to build their brand at the collegiate level. Because let's be real, they can, like, right now these collegiate athletes' likenesses is being taken advantage of, and they're not making as much money as they probably should be, because they're making so much money for their schools and for their program. And that's money that if they were paid for those services would certainly be leaps and bounds more money they could make building their brand in the G League. You can't build yourself a personal brand as a G League player. You absolutely can as a player and a star player on a legit big name college school.
Yeah. And then just to my final point, like, you look at Antonio Blakeney, he was averaging 39 points and 15 assists in the G League. And what kind of notoriety did he get? And, like, he played alongside Ben Simmons, and for a while he was, like, he had all these accolades coming out of high school. He was a top recruit. He was a top 100 recruit and all of this stuff. And then he went to the G League, and, like, people stopped caring. Like, outside of Bulls fans, like, in us watching highlights of him dropping 45 with the Windy City Bulls, people don't care. And so that's, I think, going to be the hardest, the biggest obstacle. If the NCAA just figures out and says, you know what, fine, players can make money off their own likeness. If they want to go to a local car dealership and run a 30-second commercial and get paid 10 grand to do it, they should let them do that. And then the fan base won't be so angry. We all knew this was happening, and now it's just coming to fruition, and it's coming out and being told publicly. So I think there's a lot of change that's going to be coming. I'm not sure exactly what it is. If I could put my bets on it, the NBA will probably lift their ban on the age requirement at 18. I could see that happening. As far as the G League, though, I think the G League is what it is, and it's great for what the NBA is using it as for, but to turn it into some kind of semi-professional farm system league that will get major notoriety or major attention, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to another question here. This one actually was sent in to us last week and we didn't have time for it, but it's a really interesting question that does have, you know, an effect on the Bulls, but it's also more of just like an NBA question as far as how the draft works and this whole tanking epidemic that we have on our hands. So this question comes from Johnny via email. Remember, you can email us your Bulls questions at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Johnny says, we do need to end tanking. It's pulling half the NBA into being deliberately bad. What do you think of a draft system where the first two picks go to the 8th playoff seeds in each conference, with the lower of those two getting the top pick, And then best records outside the playoffs in order. And then seventh seeds in the playoffs and up the rest of the way. This would be this way good teams get better and bad teams are not incentivized to tank. In fact, they're pushed to compete. So, Jordan, what do you think about that as perhaps a way to restructure which teams are rewarded with which picks in the draft?
Yeah, I think the steps that the NBA is taking right now in order to sort of disincentivize losing and doing all these things to tank and get the top pick, like, you can make slight changes to things. And I think giving NBA teams lottery pick, like NBA playoff teams lottery picks, I don't know about that, but taking what they're doing right now and saying, like, evening out the chances of getting that number one pick and sort of what Adam Silver has explained as a rerouting of the NBA lottery, I think it's good steps for the NBA. I think there's obviously going to be a few more changes going on to try and get the bottom of the half of the league not to do what they're doing right now. It's difficult too when you see teams like Golden State, who has Steph Curry playing in his prime, Klay Thompson playing in his prime, Kevin Durant playing in his prime, and Draymond Green playing in his prime, all on the same team. And then you flip sides and you go to LeBron and what he did with the Heat. Like, this is where all this came from. With the superstars stacking on each team, you get two or three superstars on a team. You look around the league and it's like, why would we hang around and be mediocre when we know we can't beat any of these teams? So I think the problem with stars aligning together on the same team also kind of hurts the NBA draft and the way that teams are tanking to try and do this. It also comes down to money too, in the cap. The cap, it's hard, and people are realizing now that throwing a whole bunch of money at some of these players is probably not the most ideal place. Like, Golden State built themselves from the bottom up. Some of these other teams with rising stars, they built themselves from the bottom up with rookie contracts and guys that they're able to keep on their team. So I feel like there's a lot of moving parts here. Obviously, I'd like to see the lottery change a little bit just so the NBA at the bottom half of the league is a little bit more competitive. But honestly, I don't have that big of a problem with it. I think even tanking teams are still getting attention and people are still paying attention to some of these young players that are around the league that are on these teams. And it's weird because this is the only professional league that I feel like people pay attention to the bottom feeders in the league.
Yeah, that's true. Because it's that popular of a league. Its popularity is still growing, not just in this country, but across the globe. I mean, the NBA is starting to rival the NFL with all the struggles that the NFL has gone through recently as perhaps the most popular sport in this country. And, you know, as far as worldwide popularity, it's still not close to soccer, but it's, you know, it's certainly making strides. And that's why even the teams that are bad have some kind of following. And people are watching their games. As far as Johnny's recommendation of a new way to structure it with the eighth seeds in each conference getting the top two picks, the remaining teams outside of the playoffs then getting down, getting the higher lottery picks in order, and then starting with the seventh seeds, moving your way to the one seeds, filling out the back half of the draft. It's an interesting thought to sort of reward the teams that are right there on the cusp of competing. And, you know, ideally rewarding them with the top tier caliber talent in the, you know, the following summer's draft. Another one that I've heard that I think is interesting, and I can't remember who originally proposed it. I think I saw it in an SI magazine that was talking about the draft like a year or two ago. But essentially to say, all right, whether it's, you know, Vegas odds makers or maybe you have, you know, experts, you know, among media who follow these teams year round, or maybe you have executives fill out a survey before the season begins and rosters are all in place. Give an over under on win total for each team, all 30 teams in the league, and the teams that overachieve what people think, what the general consensus is based on these surveys. As far as, all right, well, I see this is a 30-win team. So say that 30-win team, everybody projects that team to be a 30-win team. They go out and they win 45 games. You reward them with the higher draft pick. Say a team is projected to win 42 games and they only win 30. That would have an effect on where they are in the draft. different from Johnny's recommendation, but similar along the lines of rewarding teams that are trying to be competitive. Because, look, as we're talking about this change that's coming in the 2019 draft, where it's not going to be a 25% chance the number one overall pick, if you have the league's worst record, it's going to be decreased to 14%. Still, it's going to be now an even 14% for the three teams that have the three worst records, as opposed to one, two, and three being tiered differently. I don't think that's really going to de-incentivize tanking all that much, because you're still going to give yourself, it's not a 25% chance if you get the number one overall pick. Now it's going to be, all right, well, can we at least have one of the three worst records in the league to get the top 14% chance across the board for one of those top three picks? Because right now there are eight teams fighting to get themselves into that top three or that top five, and just changing and decreasing the percentage of the number one overall, really, I don't think is going to have a huge change and a huge impact as far as teams not trying to tank. I really don't see that changing.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at some of the small markets, too, that are teams that just can't get themselves off the ground. I think that's part of the reason, too, the NBA doesn't like the whole tanking idea, which is, it's obvious. I mean, look at, for example, Detroit. I mean, this is the first year that they've really pushed for trying to be competitive, and even they're sitting outside of a playoff spot, even with acquiring Blake Griffin. Look at how many fans show up to their games. Look at how many people pay attention to them. Hardly anybody. You look at games around the league, like even if you looked at the crowd last night at that Charlotte Hornets game, people weren't there. And it's hard to put yourselves outside of Chicago, where no matter what the product is on the floor, the Bulls have the best attendance. And I think people still love the Bulls here and pay attention no matter what they're doing. And for a lot of other markets, it's not like that, like Orlando and Memphis and even Atlanta and Sacramento and Phoenix and Charlotte. So some of these places that if they had better teams, they'd be thriving. But I think you get into that point where they kind of meddle all the time at the bottom feeder of the league, and it's not good for the NBA's health as a whole from top to bottom. So I think that's another aspect to it as well, is why they want to get rid of that and why they need to make changes. Is not only just because you don't want to isolate some of these fan bases in smaller markets, and you don't want things to happen where in Detroit you're getting like a crowd of 5,000 people coming a night when you have a brand new stadium and can fill 22,000 every night, and you have a superstar in Blake Griffin. So just little things like that, I feel like, are going to make massive changes. Obviously, I think this is only the first step for Adam Silver in terms of changing the way the NBA lottery is. Obviously, he's got some great ideas about changing the way the playoff format is, too. So I think if you sit back and wait a couple years and just look at the landscape of what Adam Silver's trying to do here, I think he's going to make a lot of moves, and it's going to be beneficial for the Bulls in terms of where they are maybe 2, 3, 4 years down the road. But that's why we always keep saying here, and we'll continue to say it up until NBA draft night, this is the most important draft for the Chicago Bulls in terms of tanking this season.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's no denying that, because if they manage to string, I mean, that was their fifth consecutive loss to Charlotte last night, and they got a big one coming up. They're playing the Dallas Mavericks on Friday. I'm pretty sure Memphis and Phoenix play each other tonight, so one of those two teams is going to get a win and go from either 19 to 20 in Memphis's case, or 18 to 19 in Phoenix's case. So like, the Bulls can still weasel their way into a decent percentage for a top three pick, maybe even the number one overall. And hey, maybe they'll get lucky. The draft lottery's taking place in Chicago. Maybe that will shine in our favor. But again, I mean, yes, it's important that the Bulls, if they can, get themselves into the top five of this draft because of that talent that's there at the top of this class specifically. But again, I'll echo my sentiments from just a minute ago. I don't think the change that is coming in 2019 is a strong enough change to de-incentivize tanking, because it's still going to give the three worst teams the best odds at the number one overall pick and the best odds at top three picks. It's just going to be weighted differently from pick one to pick three. So like you said, I have faith. I hope that Adam Silver can continue to look at this issue. The league can continue to look at this issue and find something that works. Because, as you said, I mean, as much fun as the NBA is, as much as it is growing in popularity everywhere, there are too many bad teams, too many irrelevant teams, and that's really hurting things. Once the NBA playoffs start rolling, we're all going to be locked in, and it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun like it is every single year. But the 82-game season and all of the garbage games that come along with that, it does drag the league down a little bit.
Matt, I'd just like to tell you that the bottom 10 teams in the league right now over the last 10 games, they're 4-44. 4-44.
Yeah.
I mean, the top five teams are 0-35 in the last 10 games.
And that's something that the NBA doesn't have as it's trying to rival the NFL. The NFL has a lot of problems, but you see teams in the NFL go from worst to first all the time. NHL too. I mean, look at the Philadelphia Eagles. Didn't they finish dead last in the NFC East last year?
I'd have to fact check, but yeah, I think so.
They're Super Bowl champions. NHL happens all the time. You know, eight seeds going all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. Teams that were at the bottom of the barrel in their division the year prior, making it to the playoffs, making deep runs in the playoffs. It happens in football and hockey all the time. Baseball, a little less frequently. But the NBA, it's like, no, if you're a team that's really struggling and you're in the basement and you're a lottery team, a rebuilding team, a tanking team, just look at the Sixers, man. It can take a long time for you to become relevant again.
Agreed. And I think in baseball too, you can look at some teams like the teams that won the World Series, the Astros. They were bottom feeders in the AL for a long time before they got some of these stars. Like, you can look at the Chicago Cubs too, and you can look at the Minnesota Twins. Even as late as last year, they went from a 60-win team to a team that was playing for a wild card bid. Like, things can happen, and I think the parity in the NBA, they have some things to figure out. But I think I'm confident in Adam Silver. I think he's the best commissioner out of the four leagues, so I'm very confident in Adam Silver figuring something out to get a little bit more parity in this league. But you can't complain too much when you've got some of the best games going on, in terms of you got the best star in a generation in LeBron playing. You've got a team that's generationally historic in Golden State. So I can't complain too much about it.
We're all anxiously looking forward to the NBA playoffs because they're always great. Sometimes you'll get those first round series, particularly in the East, that are duds. That is like, all right, well, this will be over in four or five games. And you know that confidently before it even starts. But really, second round conference finals and finals, even though the finals last year were a bit of a disappointment and only lasting five games, nothing is better than a great NBA playoff series that goes to six or seven games and has some exciting photo finishes and buzzer beaters and drama. It is so good. It just sucks that we have to wait a long time to get there and endure a league that's, you know, 15 of their 30 teams are basically irrelevant.
Yo, so do you have a Bulls related question? Because I got one that I want to finish up with. It's kind of a behind the scenes question. Do you have a Bulls specific question? Let me just get right to that.
Yeah, let's just go with that.
All right. To wrap up our mailbag segment, we had a little bit of a behind the scenes question, and this is a pretty cool question. I don't think we've ever answered anything like this before on air. This one comes from Bentley. He said, "Hey guys, first time I've written in. I feel like everyone writes in questions specifically about the Bulls players, or they're the same questions over and over. But I'm curious about behind the scenes of the show. How many hours do you guys spend a week on the show? What's the biggest obstacle for you guys both when doing the show? Keep up the great work. You guys continue to bring the best hour of podcasting a day." So, Matt, I'll throw that at you first.
Well, thanks. Who did you say sent that in? Bentley?
Bentley,
well, thank you, Bentley. We are appreciative that you are one of our loyal listeners, and I'm glad that you enjoy the show. That's an interesting question. I mean, other than the occasional miss because of scheduling conflicts, you know, Jordan and I, this is a 5-day-a-week podcast. And when Jordan and I jumped on to the Locked On Network from our previous show, The Debatables, that was a big shift, because with The Debatables, we were doing two, maybe three shows a week. Is that about right, Jordan?
Yeah, I would say so. About 2 to 3 a week.
And I mean, doing a show 5 days a week is a lot. It's a lot of content. And really, when we were brought on board, David Locke, who is the play-by-play guy for the Utah Jazz, we've had him on as a guest. He's the head of the Locked On Network. He's a great guy. He told us, you know, as we're moving into the 2018 year, the goal is, you know, 5 shows a week for every show across the board and somewhere between 20 and 30 minutes per show. And you guys know, back when Jordan, if you were listening to Jordan and I when we were doing our debatable show and even still listening to this, our average show is not 20 to 30 minutes. We're usually going 45 minutes somewhere, you know, sometimes close to an hour. And now we're doing that 5 days a week. Because we like talking Bulls basketball. We like talking NBA. And usually we'll come into a show with, all right, we want to talk about this, this, and this. And it'll be sometime around a half hour. And because Jordan and I both love to talk Bulls with each other, it usually ends up being a lot longer than that. So hopefully that's something that our listeners enjoy, because more Bulls content is more Bulls content. It is a challenge sometimes with our schedules, but, you know, thankfully Jordan and I both work side jobs that, you know, have some flexibility to them. So the biggest challenge I would say is just finding times Monday through Friday, 5 days a week, where Jordan and I can sit down and record these shows. And then outside of that, it's, you know, just putting the work in, trying to grow our social media platform and interacting with Twitter followers, which, you know, I don't really count as work. I think it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, it's part of the quote unquote job, but, and it does take time, but I mean, it's time that, I won't speak for you, Jordan, but I think I can. All of the time and effort we put into creating this show and building this show is, yes, technically work, but it's a hell of a lot more fun than any other work I might be doing.
I would completely agree. And that's why, like, when you guys interact with us on Twitter or Facebook, or you send in emails or questions or comments, or there's something that irritates you, or there's something that you like about this show, that's what keeps Matt and I going. And at least for me, that's what keeps me going. As far as people are interacting with us, they have an opinion, whether it's you hate what we just said or you love what we just said, the interaction alone is fantastic. And that's what we're here for. I think as far as the biggest obstacle I would say for this is trying to put out content that isn't repetitive. And I think Definitely. That gets hard with five days a week of doing shows. And that's kind of why we tried to break things up with guests. And we like to bring on people that not only you might read or hear about every single day that are in Chicago's media, but have polarizing opinions too, and opinions that might be different from Matt and I. And it's good to mix that things up. And that's why we do segments as well. So I think the biggest obstacle would be just trying to bring you guys fresh content. Not only that, but if you're a new listener and this is the first time you've listened to this show, we are here to give you Bulls basketball analysis and news and stories of the week, but we're also here to entertain you for an hour. And I think that's the biggest part of it. And that's why I feel like our show is completely different from some of the other Locked On shows on the network, and which is great. And I think that makes us unique. And so one of the obstacles is not only to continue to entertain you, but to bring you the best news. And I would say too, I think one of the biggest things of the show is, you know, we spend 30 minutes a day doing audio. For every 30 minutes of audio there's probably about an hour of production work that goes into it. And I do all the production work here. So anytime you hear a drop or a sound bit played in an episode, that's all on us. So we don't have a producer for the show.
No, I'll correct you. That's all on you. Yeah, I have to give Jordan all of the credit in the world there, because he is our production guy. So, you know, I hop on the mic and I talk Bulls with him, but he's the one doing all the gritty stuff and cranking these episodes out post-production to get them out to you 5 days a week. So, I mean, my thanks to you, Jordan, on that front, because this show would not be as consistent as it is without you doing all of that extra legwork.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I like things like at the beginning of our show with Chris Black, like being able to put in spots of Chris Farley and just like making you laugh to start off the show. That's that type of thing keeps me going. I like doing that thing. And I even listen back and I'll even have a laugh or two. So I'm hoping you guys are laughing along with us or like the drops that we're putting in there. But I would say probably for how many hours we spend a week, I would say recording time is probably anywhere between 7 and 10 hours a week. And then production time is probably the same. So, and then researching and coming up with topics and talking with Matt and just working our social media and doing everything we can to bring you guys the best content. I mean, it's almost a full-time job doing this. So, but we appreciate it. And we love doing it for you guys. And believe me, Matt and I like to talk a lot. So we're always here. And so obviously you can tell when we don't have a lot to talk about, it ends up being our, it ends up being an hour episode where sometimes it's the best episode we do when we don't have a whole lot of content going into the shows. So I think it's just, it's different every day. And some days, obviously, you can hear it. We'll bring you a full compact episode. Sometimes we don't. And that's just the way the episodes go. But we're here. We love doing it. And we love giving you guys kind of a peek behind the curtains. And that's why I'm here to tell you that the text message and voicemail line is going to be huge. So once again, 331-979-1369 is our voicemail and text message line. Please interact with us too. I also want to mention this is maybe we'll do a giveaway to incentivize you guys to start up using the text line and voicemail line. I'll have to figure something out as well as the season winds down, but this has been a whole lot of fun. We're coming up on actually our 1 year anniversary of like the Debatables, starting this show together as a whole. So I think the development of the show has been fantastic as well. So people who are first time listeners here, or if you've listened to us for a year straight, even all the way back to the Debatables, we appreciate you guys more than you guys know. And if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be doing this and we wouldn't have the opportunities that we do have.
Absolutely. And just as a little extra behind the scenes peek for our listeners, Jordan and I did receive a quick attaboy email from David Locke, the head of the network, earlier this week, telling us that our numbers are consistently growing, the show is growing and doing well. So a big thank you to all of our Locked On Bulls listeners. We're getting more and more listens every month, every episode. And hopefully that means we're doing mostly good things and we're doing some things right to keep you coming back. Because, you know, as we've said, 5 shows a week is a lot of content. We never want it to be repetitive or stale. So continue to send us any of your suggestions for maybe segments you'd like us to do, things you'd like us to talk about. And all of the appreciation in the world coming from Jordan and myself for the fact that that this show is growing and growing stronger.
Yeah, and if there's any guests that you guys want to hear talk about Chicago Bulls or the NBA in general, please send those to us. You can text message us. You can send it via social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. We've had people in the past that say, hey, you guys, this would be a great guest to have on. Obviously, we try to pick and choose the guys around Chicago that we feel like guys and people that are intact and not only are fun to talk to, but can entertain you guys.
Did
as well.
Somebody ask us on Twitter the other day if we get Big Cat on the show?
Yeah, that's like asking Tim Tebow to start in a major league game and hit a home run on his first pitch. So like that type of thing will happen. Hopefully it'll come in time. Some people are easier and more willing to come on podcasts than others. So we just try to get the best guests we can possibly do and have the best interviews for you guys. So this is, we've grown our brand in a matter of a year, and we're hoping to do bigger and better things as this season goes on. And obviously, once the Bulls turn this around and become competitive again, this show is going to be a hell of a lot more fun. And it's been fun for a tanking team.
I've been having a great time, even though they're not a very good team right now.
So with that, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year of nothing but basketball talk. Plenty of great shows over there across the NBA. So go check Nothing But Net channel out on Dash Radio or the Dash Radio app. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. But for Jordan and Matt, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you again so much for listening. Remember, use that text message and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great night.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.